Chapter 10, Transgender Conflicts and Autism. As a trans woman living in the UK, I often find myself having to handle difficult social situations requiring nuance in how they are responded to. If I enter a single gender women's bathroom and someone stops me to tell me that the men's bathroom's in the other direction, I have to make a judgment on the person who's stopped me. Are they stopping me because they've clocked that I'm a trans woman, they do not believe trans women are valid as women, and they want me to leave because of that? If so, do I fight my ground? Do I provide ID like my passport, which thankfully lists me as female? Will doing so be sufficient proof to them, or just leave me further entrenched in an argument? Should I even feel the need to? If they get aggressive and threaten violence in my presence, should I shut myself into a cubicle away from them? Should I run? Would obeying that thought in the back of my mind that tells me to just flash my vagina as an act of defiance get them to back off, or simply further the incorrect belief that having lower surgery is a requirement to being taken seriously as a trans woman? Or, on a completely different tack, would just simply saying I'm a woman be enough? Would they apologise, trust that I know myself best and let me go about my business, embarrassed that they'd incorrectly read my gender presentation? Would the staff in the venue defend my right to be there? Would they be trained enough in trans rights to know my rights? Would I be safe until venue staff arrived? Do I have friends nearby? Would the defence of a cis woman coming in and telling them to back off be enough to protect me, or would it just put that friend at risk? Responses to the existence of transgender people vary wildly from person to person currently, in the UK and across the world, and as a result, these situations are difficult to manage at the best of times. There's a delicate balancing act to any interaction. The line of reading, if a judgment on my appearance is a mistake made in good faith or an act of aggression designed to force me into an unsafe situation. And being able to tell the difference ultimately decides my safety in a lot of situations. I have to rely on knowing when I'm safe and in a position to correct and teach people, when I'm in a position where I need to fight for my rights, and when the safest thing to do is to hide, putting my own rights aside for the sake of staying safe in a given moment. When you're also on the autism spectrum, reading these situations with nuance can become even more difficult. I struggle often to read the more nuanced, unspoken aspects of social interactions accurately. When looking at a person's face, there are 1,000 bits of data every second, and my brain struggles to hone in on what's important and tune out what's not. In the chaotic storm of static information being generated all the time, I often don't know what to look out for, and struggle to know the intent behind something said in the moment. If someone does an exaggerated smile or frown, I can look at that expression and tell you it's a smile or a frown and the emotion connected to that. But in a fast-moving conversation outside of a testing environment with someone I don't already know, I often struggle to contextualise little shifts in tone of voice, the facial expression and posture clues to tell if they're a threat or they're safe. As a result, I've had to live a lot of my life post-transition assuming the worst possible outcome from social situations, and adapt accordingly. If I'm having a day where I've had to wear clothing that is not actively feminine-coded, and not been able to wear makeup or shave due to tactile sensitivity issues, I have to assume, for my safety, that I'm going to be read as male, and put into situations where I will have to defend my ability to use those spaces. If I can enter those situations alongside other women, or have the mental energy to use my ID to fight my ground, I may still use female-coded spaces, but if I'm alone and having a rough day, there are occasionally rare times where I have to face defeat and use male-coded spaces instead. Male-coded spaces still pose risks to me as a trans woman, but sometimes that will seem like a lesser risk than entering a female-coded space and risking being confronted by someone who does not have my best interests at heart. If I'm using a women's bathroom alone, I will usually keep my passport in an easily accessible pocket of my bag, so I know it's there if I need to use it to defend myself. If someone seems like they're going to get aggressive, to be safe, I tend to leave the bathroom and come back later. In some ways, more difficult to handle are situations in which I face anger and aggression once already inside a cubicle. If someone starts pounding or kicking at the door or shouting threatening and derogatory terms, I will tend to assume that their threats are real. Perhaps they're just trying to scare me, but I err on the side of caution. I'll try to wait them out as best I can, but that can be tough to do emotionally. In an ideal world, I would handle these moments by putting on some headphones, getting out some stimming tools like a fidget cube or a Rubik's cube, and just repeatedly engage in known sensory tasks until I calmed down and the situation was over. I would put a song on repeat, solve the cube over and over, keep the anxiety at bay. The problem is that doing so isn't safe when under threat of attack. If the person gets past the door somehow, I have to know what's happening and be able to start moving, very quickly, if an opportunity to exit safely presents itself. The sensory information of being threatened through the door might be overwhelming, but I have to manage and endure it without my normal coping tools, just in case the worst happens and I need to run. This is sort of a theme that permeates a lot of difficult situations encountered as a trans woman with autism. The normal autism coping tools at my disposal are not safe to engage in when you're being attacked for your trans woman status. If I'm being followed through London late at night by a man who started off offering to pay me for sex, then, when I refuse his offer, starts threatening to take it by force, I can't put a song on full volume on loop in my headphones because I need to hear what he says. I can't stop and take time to obsessively plan a route home that gets away from him or gets me to a 24-hour establishment or gets me near people and cameras, because I have to look like I already know what I'm doing and that I'm heading towards somewhere with purpose. I can't use stimming aids or engage in stimming actions because that gives away my status as a vulnerable member of society who's not confident in their ability to escape this situation safely. I have to handle a difficult social situation without the tools I need to get through non-stressful situations. The situation is tougher and my tools are reduced. It's a deeply unpleasant experience to encounter. In terms of how I personally handle these sort of situations, I've learnt to tailor my coping mechanisms to fit the situations I'm in. If I'm trapped in a bathroom cubicle with someone shouting at me, I can't make use of stimming tools, but I can make use of stimming actions that are normally judged poorly by neurotypical people, because I probably will not be seen. I can sit in that stall rocking and flapping my hands if needed, and not have anything that needs grabbing and packing away if I have to make a sudden departure. I may not be able to obsessively plan if someone starts following me, but I can obsessively plan in advance in case that happens. I can plan so that someone is expecting a message from me when I arrive. I can send a Facebook recording on my phone to someone describing where I am. I can call the police and warn them of my location and the fact I'm being made to feel unsafe. Or I can even just pretend that's what I'm doing. I can make sure I know routes that take me past safe spots and focus on counting my own footsteps as a subtle form of stimming. I basically just handle these situations by adapting my coping mechanisms to account for worst-case scenarios that may come up. It's important to note, however, that not all of the difficult social situations I have to navigate as a trans woman with autism are quite so vicious or dangerous. Sometimes it's just added stress brought into mundane, everyday activities. Sometimes I'll have my ID refused because someone might not believe it belongs to me. I've had my bank account fraud locked more times than I care to admit because business owners believed I was using another person's bank card and ID for a sizable purchase. Having your ID refused or your bank card locked would be stressful for anyone. When you're also on the autism spectrum, it can be daunting to have to go and fight for your access to your own accounts while trying to stay calm enough on the surface that your anxiety handling the situation isn't read as guilt or an indication that you're trying to mislead. More than once, I've had accounts locked, and when making phone calls to resolve the issue, had the person on the other end of the line refuse to verify my identity. I gave all the correct information, all the right answers, but they hear my voice, don't believe I am who I say I am, or think I sound too anxious, and refuse to give me access to my own accounts. These are normally the most difficult situations to handle. The ones where I know I'm in the right, but I just can't get people to take me seriously as myself because of my appearance or my neuroatypical behaviour. While I shouldn't need to do this in order to get through life, I've taken to bringing paperwork with me whenever I go somewhere that I might be expected to produce proof of identity. I'll often keep alongside my passport a copy of letters confirming my transgender status, a copy of my name change forms, a copy of my diagnostic confirmation letters for Asperger's, and yet more information tying me to that identity, all sealed up in a small packet in my handbag. It's ultimately not worth the fight leaving them at home tends to cause. I just sort of live life assuming that I'm going to have to double, triple, even quadruple prove that I am who I say I am, and struggle with the issues I tell people I struggle with. In terms of potential support that could be provided for these issues, an awareness from medical professionals of the overlaps between autism and trans status, and the areas where these conflicts arise, could lead to better support in future. There needs to be education that there are unique, tough situations that trans people might face, and conversations need to be had about safe ways to get through those situations. While in a utopia, you wouldn't need to teach trans women with autism how to stay calm when harassed without causing issues that get them into more danger. Depressingly, it's not the world we live in yet, at least in my experience.